Hey everyone, and welcome to Developer Tea. My name is Jonathan Cottrell, and in today's episode, I'm interviewing Josh Muccio. Josh is the creator of ThePitch.fm. It is a podcast about pitching. We will talk all about Josh's podcast later on in today's episode. Of course, it is the week after Christmas when this airs. We've been off for a couple of episodes, so welcome back. If you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe in whatever podcasting app you use if you don't want to miss out on future episodes, for example, the second part of today's interview with Josh. We don't have a sponsor for today's episode, so the interview is totally just straightforward. There's not going to be any interruptions. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Josh Muccio. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Hey, great to be here.
We've already been talking, so I hate to make my listeners think that this is the first time I'm saying hi to you, but we had to cut ourselves off because we were getting into some interesting discussions and positive opinions and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited about this interview. I haven't done an interview in a while. We've been kind of on like a dry spell on the interview front with Developer Tea for a little while because I did the developer career roadmap episodes for a little bit. There's 10 or so of those.
Yeah, I was listening to some of those today.
Awesome. Yeah. And then we, you know, we do listener questions and all that. So I'm really excited to get back into interviews. And this is a really good one to get into. I think it fits on Developer Tea perfectly. Josh, you are the host of The Pitch, and I'm going to let you kind of give the meta pitch about The Pitch right now.
Tell us what The Pitch is about. I should be able to pitch it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So our show is a podcast that's a lot like the TV show Shark Tank. So entrepreneurs come on and they pitch their ideas, they pitch their businesses. And on the show, we have investors, hopefully, you know, in either investing in their company or saying, no, I'm not going to invest. And here's why. So we're about to go into our second season of the show. We actually, between you and me, and everyone listening, we had $1.5 million invested in the companies on season two. So
that's
we're
incredible.
Really excited.
Yeah, you should be. That's a huge number, especially, I mean, podcast, that's a very unique idea for a podcast, by the way.
Thanks.
Tell the listeners, like, are you playing kind of the moderator role? Are you playing the investor role? Or where do you fit into this? Maybe the silent producer?
Well, I would say all of the above except for, so I'm the host. I am not the investor at this point in time. I hope to be at some point in the future just because I like this stuff, but I'm not right now. Right now I'm the host and the silent producer in the background. So it was actually an investor that reached out to me because of another podcast I was doing and said, hey, I've always thought it'd be cool to do a podcast like Shark Tank. And he kind of had some different ideas from where it would go. But over time, we've been doing it for about a year and a year and a half. We've kind of found ourselves in the show, essentially. And that's kind of how we got here. But yeah, I'm the guy, you know.
Yeah, the brains in the background kind of thing. So you sent me this link to the previous podcast that you had. Was it called Daily Hunt?
It was called Daily Hunt, yeah.
Very nice. So you interviewed a good friend of mine, Brian Levin, who is, of course, he is a host on Design Details, another show on the Spec Network.
That was the first show, right?
Well, we co-started Spec together, actually. So,
really?
Yeah, Design Details and Developer Tea both launched on the 5th of January, coming up on 2 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that because I found out about Design Details first. Well, obviously because of
sure,
Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's how things got rolling. But you know, those guys have been developing a lot of the relationships and they've been doing a lot. I mean, obviously they're out on the West Coast and I'm over here in my hole in the East Coast. So
hey, I'm down in Florida.
There you go. So it's they're a little bit more obviously the concentration of hosts and shows is weighted towards the West Coast for us, but
yes,
but yeah,
reasons.
So yep, so we started it together, and that's just a really interesting little overlap there.
Yeah, it is, and believe it or not, when we first launched, Bryn actually reached out to me separately and was just like, "Hey, I love what you're doing. You guys are going to absolutely crush it. He like asked for, you know, if like if there's anything he could do to help. And like we even actually spent a good amount of time trying to figure out how to do advertising. And like, because to me, I was like, I have no clue how this advertising works on podcasts and stuff.
Yep.
And so, yeah, he's been super awesome. And I'm kind of excited to be on a Spec FM show, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. We actually kind of started our relationship the same way. We got in touch with each other because both of us were doing similar stuff and we saw each other's names on message boards and, you know, upvoting places and that kind of thing. Needed to learn stuff. You know, we were both very new. Both shows were obviously brand new and we didn't know anything about advertising or any of the rest of it. And so we just decided to trade ideas.
That's awesome. And he didn't give you a hard time for living in Chattanooga?
He didn't. You know, Chattanooga, actually, to the blind eye, Chattanooga seems like a middle of nowhere kind of place. But if you give me like 5 minutes, I can actually pitch you on Chattanooga pretty good if you're here. one of the great things we have, by the way, is the gig internet. So at my house right now, I have gigabit internet, and it's like cheaper than most providers provide.
From Google, or is this from somebody else?
No, this is actually the first gigabit internet in the country. It's by a company called EPB. And if you go and look it up, there's a lot of cool history around it, but it's basically there's some government ties and it's a utility service. So it's kind of a different weird loophole thing where it's very affordable and the service is really good. And it's actually like something that pretty much all Chattanoogans are pretty proud to have.
I would be really proud of it too. The only thing you guys don't seem to have is a Chipotle, if I'm correct.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's the one scourge of Chattanooga, really, that remains. There was a little bit of a opinion poll going around of what should replace a restaurant that was going out of business downtown, and pretty much everyone said Chipotle, even though everything else downtown, we've made it as little chains as possible. And everybody's just like, well,
everybody wants
Chipotle's allowed though. Chipotle's allowed.
It's the exception. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the exception to the rule. So the pitch, this is like a Shark Tank show. You're at episode number 48. Obviously, you've seen a lot of, is that correct? Episode 48?
Yeah. I mean, probably 49 by the time this goes live.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, our initial 50 episodes did not actually have investments happening on the air. That was probably the biggest complaint, is like we were saying that we were the Shark Tank podcast, but we can never find investors who would actually make any kind of commitment in an hour. So that's the big change in season two. And it took a lot of work to make that happen. But
wow. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
So season two, where are we now? Season two is out now.
No, season two starts January 11th. So none of those episodes have gone live yet.
Well, there you go. But you already have them in the works then.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the works. And I've actually kind of grown the team a little bit, because I feel like after we did the recording event, I knew I had something really good on my hands. And I also felt acutely aware of my inabilities, essentially, to take it to
where it
needed to go. Like, it just had so much potential when listening to the tape. And so I tried my bestest to to kind of break into a world that I'm not into. And that was the world of public radio and people that know how to do narrative storytelling. So kind of the traditional, like, highly produced podcasts that you hear, you know, WNYC's Radio Lab or the Gimlet shows or any show by NPR, those type of shows. And so I tried to kind of grab some people from there, at least part-time, and get their get them working on the project. And it took a few months, but we've actually got a great team of people working on it. And that's probably what's most exciting to me, is it's not just the show. The first season was just me, and all the decisions were made inside my own head. And now we're actually, you know, we're actually like making good decisions, and I'm learning a bunch.
Multiple people's opinions and interesting experience from different arenas and everything else.
Yeah. So as you can tell, hopes are high for season two.
Yeah, that's exciting. So so you mentioned that season two brings the change that there are going to be investments on air. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, 1.5 million was invested. So, and the other thing that we're doing that's really key is we're actually kind of being our own accountability partner as a show. And instead of just publishing the episodes, and because you know Shark Tank, 2/3 of the deals that actually happen on Shark Tank were quote unquote
falling through.
Yeah,
right?
2/3 of them follow through. So for us, we know some of the deals that happen are going to fall through in due diligence, and like there's nothing we can do about it. But at least we can let our listeners in on that and make that a part of the story instead of acting like it didn't happen. So
sure,
there will be episodes where it kind of ends a certain way and there was investment. But then in the end, maybe one or two of the investors didn't end up investing, or the inverse could happen. And, you know, they end up investing more than they committed to on the show, that sort of thing.
Sure. Or maybe the product owner backs out. That's another option.
So it'll be really interesting. Part of me really hopes that one of the companies just totally bombs and, folds up shop, just because it would make an interesting story. Like, I don't wish that on anybody in particular, but it would make
some of my
radio.
Favorite stories on Shark Tank are the ones that are like kind of the told you so stories of the products that are really good and no shark ever actually invests, but they still follow up with the one because it's like, well, it's too public now. People are going to know that they went on and were successful without the Shark Tanks, and we have to cover it now.
So what was that one that I heard about? I think I don't know what it was called, but it was just a phone. It was a brick replacement of a phone that didn't actually work. And it was made, I guess, to be like a cigarette patch would be, or like a nicotine patch, but for your phone habit. So like you can hold something up to your ear, and they just crushed them. They're like, this is the dumbest idea ever.
Terrible idea. Yeah, sure.
But then
it went on to be somewhat successful.
Actually,
is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure about that. I just know that that's one that I heard about. But
yeah,
no, I don't know any of the ones you're talking about.
We actually, that's a weird overlap. We talked about media addiction on like episode number 3 of Developer Tea, and how there's some interesting, pretty compelling statistics about how often you actually just literally lift your phone up and then put it back down. Even if you weren't doing anything meaningful, just looking at it and, unlocking it and then locking it right back.
Yep.
And how much energy and time and mental, mental energy that's taking from your day. It's pretty crazy. There's some really interesting statistics.
Have you guys talked about on the show flow state at all? Like getting in the flow or the zone for
Yeah,
work?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, we have. Yeah.
I feel like that's the battle for me. Is like every time I'm looking at my phone, it's a moment that I could be in the zone elsewhere, or it's a moment that took me out of the zone, or like it.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm always like every couple of weeks or maybe every couple of months, I'm like having a come to Jesus moment. I'm like, I gotta shut this thing. I gotta delete another 10 or 15 apps. I gotta shut off notifications on these 5 or 6 apps, and it always gets worse, and then I have to.
Yeah. You know, I almost just said I should do an episode on that, but let's just talk about it now. there's a really interesting thing happening there that we as a culture, we want to eradicate technology as a solution for our lack of focus, right? And because there's some level of somebody's sending us this message, whether it's someone in the media or maybe it's our parents or but our generation specifically, and when I say our, I mean, people who are between 20 and 40 or so, with some fuzzy boundaries there, we know what it's like to have little technology or no technology taking up our attention. And there's something about that feeling of not having technology that we want to go back to. It's almost like a Luddite desire to return to our roots in a way. And I would say it's my position that need to purge is actually the wrong solution to the right problem. I think that
really?
I think us trying to go back to our roots is really it's not the complete solution. I think some of the things that we can do, certainly there are things we can do. Like, for example, I'm a huge proponent of do not disturb all the time, right? Like turning off notifications, turning off all the push stuff. Sorry for those of you who make products that have push. But I've even told people, if you get push notifications that a new episode of a Developer Tea is coming out in the middle of your workday and it messes up your focus. I don't want that. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to interrupt you. And I don't think that it's a good, I don't think it's healthy to be interrupted. But at the same time, you know, technology has the opportunity. I believe that technology is kind of inherently moldable, right? So
yeah.
it can be good or it can be bad. And I think we have this bad tendency to think that it is inherently bad for our focus, but we can use it to increase our focus too, right? There's a lot of pliability there.
It's true. We do tend to kind of blame these companies and say like, well, the default shouldn't be to have all these notifications. And while that's true, like they're trying to drive profits and things like that. So they aren't thinking yeah. like that. In fact, somebody was trying to make the argument that like, you should be, you know, watching out for our best interests as a technology company and things like that. Have you heard of Nir Eyal? I don't even know how to say his last name, but the guy who wrote the book Hooked.
I believe so, yeah.
So his whole...
I haven't read the book, but...
The whole premise is like how to build products that are going to keep users coming back and coming back and coming back and like how to feed their addictions. And a big focus of the book is actually notifications, whether they're email or SMS or push notifications or whatever, and how to craft those in a way that, you know, drives a return for your company. And then he goes on to like become an influencer that talks about how to essentially counter that if you're a consumer and not get hooked by all of these companies. So he's like making money off like both sides of this theory.
And it's a war almost, right?
Yeah. But just kind of crazy that he's able to do that. How often do you have Do Not Disturb on your phone? I'm curious.
As often as it is on my body. It's pretty much always on Do Not. And the first thing I do when I sit down at my computer is option click. I don't know if you know this, if you're on a Mac, I guess it's called the notification. I don't know what the icon is called, but it's the notification like slide out thing
yeah.
that comes out of the right.
Yeah.
You can option click that little icon and it turns Do Not Disturb on for your computer. And that's the first thing I do every time I sit down at my computer. And it's amazing. Here's the thing. It's amazing. And maybe because I have crafted my life this way and the people that I work with, they know that I'm this way. And so I've kind of trained them to treat me a particular way. Hopefully I'm not that disillusioned to my situation, but it's amazing how little I need those notifications now, like how much I thought that I needed them. And then now that I don't have them, how little it has actually impacted the work that I do in a negative way.
If somebody really, really wants to get a hold of you and it's really important, they're probably on your favorites list. And so they can call you and it's going to get through to your phone, right?
Well, all of my Do Not Disturb doesn't remove calling, I don't believe, or at least it doesn't.
I think it removes
Maybe
it from
it does.
People. I think it lets people on your favorites list through, or people that call twice in a row is my understanding of it.
Okay, yeah, that's
so
probably
like you don't
true.
Get Slack notifications on your computer.
No, I don't get Slack notifications. I do have the badges on Slack specifically, partially because Spec has a Slack channel, partially because the whiteboard we work through Slack, and so if somebody is really needing something, they can at you know. And direct or whatever mention that's
yes
what mention me in Slack and I'll see the
number
red
up. Okay
the batch, but what I won't do is set up like channel notifications, right? Or like I'm not going to put a number down at the bottom for every single time somebody throws something in general, you know, like
oh gosh
that's
yeah
that's not useful for me. And so I try to limit all of that kind of extra push and all of the push notifications that I can possibly remove from individual applications on my phone, I'll turn those off as well.
Yeah, that's really smart. And actually, you know, for me, it's like, it's a combination of the push notifications, but then it's also this just incessant desire to like pop up, open my phone and I guess get some sort of dopamine fix. Is that the drug yeah. that they're the neurotransmitter?
Yeah, it's the natural thing.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, the dopamine stuff. Anyway, so that I'm always just like pulling out my phone and checking Facebook for no freaking reason. And, you know, oh yeah, here's another, like somebody invited me to play some other stupid game. Like that's the only notification I have. Like this is even though I have badges and notifications and everything shut off on the stupid thing. Like I still go to So I finally got fed up with myself and I just deleted the app yesterday. And I'm still kind of wondering, you know, what's happening on Facebook, but like, I'll check it later and it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting you bring up Facebook specifically. I don't try to preach this because I know there's really a lot of varying opinions and everybody has their own way of doing things. I get on Facebook probably once every maybe 3 weeks to 4 weeks.
That's awesome. Catch up on all your friends that have had babies and stuff.
Yeah, not even that. Usually it's just, did somebody try to message me and get my address to send me like a Christmas card or something?
Okay.
Like that's the level of,
or listener
of
mail.
Investment, right? But on the flip side, you know, every time I open a new tab, I'm typing Twitter faster than I can think.
And yeah.
So if it's not one thing, your brain is going to just naturally fill it. So you have to be pretty vigilant about it. I do have an app that actually works pretty well. I don't like to promote tons of like specific apps, but this particular app I've talked about before, it's called Focus.
Yes. It's literally
the Focus app. It is a paid app. And I actually did buy it. I had the free version for a little while. I wanted the scripting features and stuff like that. So I went ahead and bought the paid one. I don't know if they do a timed thing, a time trial now or whatever it is. But if you can gain focus from something, the argument that I would present is that it's probably worth a little bit of money. And you can also do this yourself. If you, especially as a developer, you know, you can run into your host's file and change, you know, have your own blacklist of stuff. But I figured it was, you know, it's a nice enough app. It sits in my menu bar, and it helps me. It actually does help because those initial urges to run to, you know, Twitter or whatever, you're going to see something that's not expected. Like it's going to be something totally different from Twitter. It's not going to hit you the same way.
It blocks it. Does it work with Safari? Because that's actually my browser of choice.
It works with everything because it's at the system level, and you can have like a hardcore mode, which is it's kind of dangerous.
Uh-oh.
In that, like you can't turn it off. Right. So like, even if you really badly need to get to Twitter, like if you're a developer and you need to get like to dev.twitter.com or something to change a access token, if that's in your blackout list, you're not going to get to it.
Dang. Okay.
Yeah, it's invasive, but it's a good kind of invasive. So it really kind of forces you to stick to your guns and do things, quote unquote, the right way.
Yeah.
Assuming that you believe that, you know, intense focus is the right way.
That's really cool. I think I was checking out. I had heard good things about it, but then I saw that it was a paid product and I was like, nah, I'll pass.
Yeah, and there's so many free things that do, you know, something similar. And there are replacements for that. It was just, to me, the aesthetically most pleasing version. And so I just decided to bite the bullet and buy it.
Yep. It's a one-time thing. I thought maybe it was a SaaS product or something. And maybe that's what I'm getting confused by.
I think it is a one-time thing. It may be that it's a one-time thing, but if they update it to a new big number version, that it'll be paid again. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't imagine needing much more feature-wise out of this thing. It does like timers, like Pomodoro timers. I'm a big fan of Pomodoro.
Yeah.
We've talked about that on the show as well, but it does that kind of timer for you. So it'll set 45 minutes and then you get 15 minutes to go and, you know, reddit.com, whatever. And then you return back to your work phase.
So I like the idea of the Pomodoro timer system.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But every time I like get in a flow state, I work for way longer than 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And so to me, to like get out of that state to go like, you know, make myself go walk around for 5 minutes,
it's tough.
It's to me, it seemed pointless. And so I was like, forget about it. I'll just keep working.
And everybody has their own number, right? So some people have just insane amounts of focus when they are in flow state.
Okay.
I probably have a little bit longer than the average person, but I'm not as long. My focus, like limit, I guess you could call it, is not as lengthy as my boss's, for example.
Gotcha.
Like he can focus. He can sit and focus. He has like a whole day Pomodoro, basically. Like,
really?
He can sit and just stay focused the whole day.
He's got a huge tomato.
Yeah. So, but the reality is, like, the problem with that is that you're gonna eventually burn out. It's kind of like running a race, right? Even though initially you do have plenty of energy to just blast past everyone, you don't want to use it. Like you need to have a little bit of that reserve and a little bit of that respite, so that you can, you know, later on in the day, for example, if you need to actually engage in a meeting at 4 p.m. With a client, like, in bringing us back to our original discussion, you have the energy to pitch, right?
There you go.
There we
are. Bring it back.
I knew we would get there eventually. We just had to find our way around.
We had to find our way through the forest.
It's a journey. I mean, let's stick on the subject of flow state for like one more minute, and then we'll continue on to the pitch.
I'm in.
Flow state, it is something that we talked about before on this show, but it's also something that's not really like a scientific thing, right? Like, everybody has their own way of getting there. There's some research around, for example, practicing flow state by doing meditation. There's some research around, if you are exercising regularly, you're probably going to be able to tap into your mental energy a little bit better. There's a lot of like mystical kind of discussion around it as well that I wouldn't really promote on this show, at least.
And then there's like nootropics and pills you can take.
Tons of stuff. I mean, there's a whole industry that's going to be built off of this stuff. And not to say one way or the other, because honestly, I haven't done enough research to say that that stuff is valid or invalid. But I do know that for me, some of the most important parts of flow state is making sure I walk into that day with at least a general plan, right? Like, we can talk about ideals all day long, but my ideal day is when I wake up and I know exactly what I need to do rather than someone else bombarding me with what they need me to do.
That's so good, but I am so bad at that. Like, I don't have people bombarding me all day because I am my own boss and I have the luxury of that. I'm extremely blessed, but I also hate myself at the end of every day because if I do make a plan, like, none of the stuff on the thing gets done. And so I always start the week with like great ambitions. By Tuesday, yeah, I'm like, why did I even write this plan down? I'm getting nothing done from it. I got all these other things done. I guess I just need self-discipline. I don't know. I'm like, I'm trying to get better.
Well, Here's another thing. So let me ask you this: how large are those lists that you're writing? So like, for a given day, you know, how many things are you trying to say? Yeah, I need to accomplish. Is it like 10 things? Is it 15? Is it like 2 or 3?
So the things I write down are like, it's only 4 or 5 things. They're totally attainable. But the problem is like when I get started on that first thing, or even before I start that first thing, I almost need like a mind map to like follow, you know, at the end of the day, like follow what bunny trails took me where so I can like self-diagnose what's happening. But like,
so you can go put signs at the head of those bunny trails so you never go down them again.
Exactly. Or like install a focus program for my brain, you know? But that's, I like, I'll think of before I even get started on task number one, I'll think of 5 other tiny things that need to get done. I'll be like, oh, I'll just get this done real quick. And that of course leads to some other, you know, thing or series of things that I'll do. And like that just compounds, you know, throughout a day for me, or combine that with notifications from other people of stuff that I need to do real quick. And you know, then all of a sudden my plans, my lists get completely shot.
Yeah. Well, and the amazing thing, Josh, and I feel like this is really good for people to hear, that a guy who started a podcast where $1.5 million was recently invested through that podcast feels like he's not getting anything done. Like, that's, I would venture to say that, yeah, partially true, maybe. Like, maybe you're learning how to develop good habits, whatever. But also, this has got to be at least partially a product of what we, you know, of our culture or something similar to that.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you didn't accidentally do the pitch, right?
No,
like,
that's for dang sure. Yeah, that's it's taken a lot of work. And to be honest, I think this is probably a similar trait of mine. It's had to take a lot of effort for me to actually continue working on the pitch. I'd say about, I don't know, 6 months into it, I was like, okay, I'm ready for the next thing. Like, I'm bored, but
yeah,
you really don't well, at least not in my experience, you don't find like true success or profit or even profitability oftentimes in 6 months on a thing. Like at that point, you just then like have your initial learnings that you can go to actually make the thing that you originally set out to create, you know? And for our show, I mean, it actually took longer than 6 months. And it kind of took the support of people around me and me like making myself stop doing stuff. Cause man, I will tinker till the cows come home on the most pointless stuff. And it's like, it's truly fun in the initial phases. But then when it comes time to like, you know, turning it into a serious business, like I don't want to do it. And so, but I'll spend all this time launching stuff and, you know, buying domains for no freaking good reason is a problem I have as well. So,
well, I have plenty of those just sitting in my GoDaddy account. Which, you know, is still just a horrible, horrible service in my opinion.
It is. It is. I moved my domains away from theirs just cause I got sick of them.
No offense. If somebody's listening to this and you work at GoDaddy, then I'm very sorry if I offended you. But yeah, it's like the necessary evil in my life. One of the few.
At least they're cheap.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. So, all right, the pitch. We talked around it quite a bit now, but what I want to talk to you about is not the show itself specifically, but rather what you've learned about pitching. Because every person who's listening to this show, I'm going to go on a little rant here.
Let's do it.
About selling. Every person who's listening to this show, whether you like it or not, and this is maybe an unfortunate truth, or maybe it's an opportunity. Take it for what you will. But whether you like it or not, selling is going to be a part of your career. Now, you're saying, well, selling is not a part of my career. I have nothing to do with the clients, or I don't actually do any work with getting people to spend money. But selling is not just about spending money, right? Selling is about convincing other people of something that you know to be true. This is my definition of selling, at least. Something that you believe strongly enough that you want other people to also believe it, and then going and presenting something to them that moves them into the same opinion sphere that you're in. In other words, they start to agree with you. That is what selling is about. It's about learning about value, right? And you're going to have to do this at many different stages in your career. On day one, you're going to have to convince yourself even that spending time learning how to do something that you have no idea how to do is worth your time. You're going to have to buy what you're selling, right? So it starts on day one, but it goes all the way through to the end of your career. You're going to be talking to potential future employers in interviews, and you're going to be trying to sell what you have to offer to their team. You're going to be talking to potential investors. Let's say you're an entrepreneur, exactly like what is on the pitch, the podcast. And you're going to be talking to people who they have money and they're ready to help make what you have in your mind, your invention, your product, your creation, your service, whatever it is, make it a reality, right? So selling is going to be a part of your life, whether you like it or not. Josh, I want you to talk a little bit about what you have learned about selling and about pitching by listening to people over and over and over pitch what they have.
Well, I'll tell you, I've definitely heard how not to do it. And I've heard how not to do it 10,000 times, because as the producer and editor of the show, that means I also get to play back these people's pitches over and over and over again. And actually, I'll make them sound better than they actually were by cutting out the parts where they ramble and cutting out all their ums and ahs and things like that. So, but that's just delivery. And I think people mess up on their pitch way before the delivery. From the very like onset of it, you assume that the person you're talking to has a similar set of priorities to yourself. And so when you pitch something, you're often going to say, well, I'm building this and like, it's going to be awesome. And you don't really sell essentially the benefits of it to that specific person. So I'd say the number one rule of pitching is you can't memorize your pitch. There is no perfect version of your pitch. There's a version of your pitch for every person you're talking to, and connecting the dots for them and their mind and what your thing, your idea, yourself, like whatever it is that you're selling, how it applies or benefits them or interacts with them is like, that's the message. Like you have to get it there. And so for me, we're always talking about, you know, what does this mean for investors? Which is like what you're selling is the opportunity, the potential upside, you know, why you're an amazing founder to work with and why you as a person are worth betting on. Like those are all, you're always that, like you're always selling yourself, you know, in every pitch you're in. So that's a constant. But that would probably be the first, my number one recommendation. And if that's all you get out of this, is to think of your product or your thing that you're building from other people's point of view and how it might benefit them. I'd say you'll be good to go. There's of course more to it than that, but.
Josh, I'm elated that this is where you started because this is something that I 100% support in pretty much every facet, but more specifically, when people go into interviews, I get more questions on this show about interviews or about, well, the two topics that I get most questions about are learning and interviews. And interviews are or resumes or the job searching process, right? And a lot of people ask, you know, what should I put on my resume? Or, you know, how should I dress? And all of these, you know, very specific questions about that process of finding a job, 99% of the time, the answer is found by switching seats, right? So this is what I tell people to do all the time. I tell them to just for 10 minutes, just put yourself in that employer's seat. The person you are talking to, act like you're them for 10 minutes. What do you want? What do you want as that person? As a boss, for example, I want you to be dependable. I want you to challenge the other people on my team, and I want you to add value to the team. If you can come in and prove to me that you're going to do those things, the hire is much more likely, right, than if you just come in and tell me all the things that you're good at and all the things that you want, right? Those are two different ways of thinking about pitching yourself as a future employee. And a lot of people get that wrong. A lot of people walk in and they say, you know, this is my salary point. This is where I want to be. Here's my skill sets. Here's my list of all the letters that you need to see. Here's where I went to school and, you know, look at my nice suit. And there's very little value in that, right? You're not really even connecting with me when you do that. Instead, you're kind of like, people are treating it more like a trade show than they are a conversation, right? They're just like putting themselves on display rather than trying to sell.
Crossing all their T's and dotting their I's. Yeah, not that important.
Exactly. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Developer Tea. Of course, this was our interview with Josh Muccio. Make sure you go and subscribe to The Pitch by going to thepitch.fm. Of course, The Pitch is available in pretty much any podcasting app, just like Developer Tea is. So go and click subscribe if you don't want to miss out on the season 2 start to The Pitch. We will be talking about The Pitch more in the next episode of Developer Tea, part 2 of my interview with Josh Muccio. Thank you for listening, and until next time, enjoy your tea.